you have to be positive at all times. Seek for help. If you don't ask, you don't get it.
Karina is perhaps one of the tens of thousands of families, if not more, for whom survival depends on charitable donations. Saeed Pourriza, London.
Christmas Eve 2020, Prime Minister Boris Johnson signed off on an historic post-Brexit trade and security agreement with the European Union after an intense 24-hour negotiation period. A press conference expected early in the day finally came in the afternoon after lawyers and translators had crossed all the T's and dotted all the I's.
I'm very pleased to tell you this afternoon that we have completed the biggest trade deal yet, worth £660 billion. A year, a comprehensive Canada-style free trade deal between the UK and the EU, a deal that will protect jobs across this country, a deal that will allow goods, UK goods and components to be sold without tariffs and without quotas in the EU market, a deal which will, if anything, allow our companies and our exporters to do even more business with our European friends.
A deal will mean Britain finally leaving the bloc's single market and customs union in a week, and freedom of movement will end. It also settles the future arrangements on a vast range of issues, from aviation and transport to civil nuclear cooperation and energy. The sticking points that took Brexit to the brink of no deal was access to British fishing waters, a contentious issue that prompted the UK to send Navy ships to the English Channel in case of clashes, and the level playing field, which is an important part of the EU single market, allowing for fair and open competition. The negotiations were very difficult, with lots at stake for many, and it was an agreement worth fighting for. Will allow us to avoid major disruptions to workers, businesses and travellers after January 1st. It will protect European interests, and this agreement is also, I believe, in the interests of the United Kingdom. It will lay solid foundations for a new start with long-time friends, and finally, it will ensure we can leave Brexit behind us. Europe continues to move forward. Despite the collective sighs of relief and resignation across Britain, the devil is in the detail. French media made waves in the hours leading up to it by asserting the UK had made huge concessions, something Westminster was quick to deny. Hardline Tory Brexiteers from the European Research Group have said its Star Chamber of Lawyers will be convened to analyse the proposed agreement, suggesting it's not over yet. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Pakistan had a fresh round of negotiations with the UAE in an effort to repair lingering strained relations between the two countries. Pakistan has been under pressure from the UAE to normalize ties with the apartheid state of Israel since August this year, when Abu Dhabi recognized Tel Aviv. For the first time, Islamabad publicly admitted about the existence of a lingering UAE demand to Pakistan to grant diplomatic recognition to Israel, something which Islamabad rejected after the country's foreign minister's visit to Abu Dhabi.
I have abundantly made it clear to the UAE that Pakistan under no circumstances can establish diplomatic ties with Israel until a permanent and durable solution is found to the Palestinian issue. I have told them about anti-Israeli public sentiments in Pakistan and reminded them of the similar nature of dispute between Kashmir and Palestine.
Foreign minister's visit to Abu Dhabi has followed suspension of visas to Pakistani citizens after alleged behind-the-scenes threats to Islamabad to replace its 1.5 million expatriates if Pakistan resisted pressure to normalize ties with Tel Aviv.
Pakistan made its position clear because of the mounting pressure from some of the Islamic countries. The problem for Pakistan is that at the public level, at the people level, it is very difficult to sell this idea of giving recognition to Israel, because for decades, Pakistani people have been steadfastly supporting the cause of the Palestinian people.
Despite close brother relations with the UAE, tens of thousands of people protested against Abu Dhabi after it normalized ties with the Tel Aviv. Israel has been desperate to normalize ties with Pakistan, hoping that if it happens, other Islamic countries would also follow the suit. However, observers say that Israel's effort through UAE and Saudi Arabia to create compelling conditions against Pakistan to normalize ties have fallen flat. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
The United Nations Security Council has held a virtual meeting to review the 10th report into the implementation of Resolution 2231, which endorses the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. During the session on Tuesday, Iran's permanent representative to the UN slammed the United States for not only failing to honor its own obligations under the resolution, but also obstructing the implementation of the commitments by other signatories. Takravanchi explained that in the past 4 years, the U.S. has imposed over 1,500 sanctions against Iran, targeting almost all sectors of Tehran's economy and cutting nearly all dividends from the nuclear agreement for Iran. He also referred to the humanitarian impacts of the sanctions on Iran, saying the embargoes are affecting the most vulnerable people in the country.
The United States claim that humanitarian goods are exempt from sanctions is an absolute lie. As an example, even today, we cannot easily import medicine for relieving the breathing problems of those injured by chemical weapons which were provided by some Western countries to Saddam and used by him during his aggression against Iran.
The Iranian ambassador reiterated Tehran's stance that any proposal for the revision, renegotiation, or extension of the JCPOA is against the UN Resolution 2231 and absolutely unacceptable.
Iran has paid a heavy price and has done much more than its fair share to preserve the JCPOA. Therefore, no one can expect us to do more.
Takravanchi further said that the deal cannot be linked to anything outside of the nuclear program, such as Iran's missile capabilities.
To develop a conventional missile program is an inherent right of any country under international law, and Iran is no exception. Consequently, Iran will not negotiate its legitimate ballistic missile program.
The Security Council session came a day after the foreign ministers of the remaining signatories to the JCPOA held a virtual meeting and reiterated their commitments to preserving the agreement. China and Russia in particular call on the U.S. to unconditionally return to the deal and lift its unilateral sanctions against Iran. This comes more than 3 weeks after the Iranian parliament passed a bill that requires the Iranian government to suspend more commitments under the nuclear deal in case sanctions continue. Iran started scaling back some of its commitments a year after the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from the deal. Tehran has time and again rejected any preconditions for reviving the agreement, noting that it will go back to full compliance once all the other parties to the court uphold their own end of the deal.
Yemeni scholars came together in the capital Sana'a to condemn some Arab states for normalizing ties with the Israeli regime. They said with signing normalization deals with Israel, these states have betrayed the Palestinians.
We've announced the continuous processes of normalization of ties with the Zionist entity. We are here to warn other Arab states not to follow the same path. Any normalization deal amounts to the betrayal of the blood of the martyrs who sacrificed their lives to protect the occupied lands against Israeli aggression.
Morocco has been the last Arab state to normalize ties with Israel after Bahrain, the UAE, and Sudan over the past months.
The scholars of Yemen reiterate their opposition to any recognition of the Zionist enemy. We believe that it amounts to betrayal of the Muslim values. This will pave the way for further aggression against the Palestinians.
The normalization deals have already sparked outrage among the public in the Muslim world, with pro-Palestine sentiment runs deep. Meanwhile, Palestinians from all political factions have been unanimous in their condemnation of the normalization deals. They seek an independent state in the West Bank and the besieged Gaza Strip with the East Jerusalem Al-Quds as its capital. So the normalization, they say, serves as betrayal of their cause.
Yemeni scholars voiced their support for the Palestinians, warning Arab world to adopt a united stance against Israeli aggression. They say the normalization deals will only embolden Israel to press ahead with its oppressive policies against the Palestinians. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
In each of the 27 EU nations, the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine will start being used in less than a week's time, on the 27th of December. The European Medicines Agency has given its approval and has played down concerns that the new highly contagious COVID-19 variant spreading in England will not respond to the vaccine.
These are issues that need to be fully scientifically assessed. At the moment, we can say that there is no evidence to suggest that the vaccine will not work against the new variant of the coronavirus.
The UK is now isolated as countries around the world impose travel restrictions due to the new, more infectious strain of the coronavirus. There has been travel chaos for millions. People have been trying to get out of the UK before travel bans are enforced. There is major disruption at the main trading corridors between the UK and EU. Global markets have been in disarray due to the deepening health crisis in Europe.
Rather than waiting for other countries to make the first move, epidemiologists are saying the British government should have done the responsible thing and blocked all non-essential travel from the UK.
We have been getting reactions from members of the public in Brussels.
It's maybe a little bit too late to close borders, and I don't think closing borders doesn't help either.
We really have to stick to the situation, to respect it, and then we will, as soon as possible, be able to open everything again.
It's a new thing, we don't know what it is, but we need to act, I think, faster, and maybe in the beginning a little bit harder.
If government imposed like that strict lockdown like they did in South Korea or like North Korea and China, I think there will be riots here.
The European Medicines Agency says it is currently in contact with 46 vaccine developers, and it expects to approve the Moderna jab on the 6th of January. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
All flights and trains coming from the United Kingdom have been barred from entering Europe. Other countries, including Canada, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Colombia and Morocco, have also suspended flights to and from the UK for 48 hours or more. Britons have been rattled by the Prime Minister's announcement that Christmas visits will have to be cancelled because of the new COVID-19 strain. And now there are growing fears the country will run out of fresh food in the days before Christmas because of freight and transport disruption. The government insists there's nothing to be worried about, though, and that ahead of Brexit, the government is fully prepared.
It's vital first to stress that these delays, which are only occurring at Dover, only affect human-handled freight, and that is only 20% of the total arriving from or departing to the European continent, which means the vast majority of food, medicines and other supplies are coming and going as normal.
The British government is dealing with an escalating public health crisis, deepening economic upheaval and Brexit trade talks in Brussels simultaneously. Prime Minister Boris Johnson's handling of all three crises has come under fire and faith in the government is waning.
It's just got to a point where now people are just going to feel like their freedom is being restricted and their basic sort of human rights, and it's spending millions of pounds on an app that doesn't even work. So, I mean, yeah, making promises they can't adhere to. So I think, yeah, they've really shot themselves in the foot.
They're doing an okay job. I think obviously they could probably do better. But, you know, I think it's always easy when you're looking on the outside in, going, you know, we'd do this or that.
No more promises that we'll be over this by such and such a date, a day at a time now. I mean, it's a difficult situation for the government. But no more promises. We'll be over this by Christmas, Easter, a day at a time. It's debatable. Who would want to be in the government situation at the moment? It's changing by the day worldwide.
I think, you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. I would urge people to think about, you know, what would they have done if they'd have been faced with everything that has happened, because I don't necessarily think that there's one right course of action. I don't necessarily think that our government have handled it the perfect way, but what is the perfect way kind of thing. And I don't think people have helped themselves by rebelling against the rules and all of that kind of thing. So
people are going to complain no matter what Boris Johnson says or does. So
the new strain of COVID-19 has already been detected in the Netherlands, Denmark, Belgium and Iceland. On the upside, the scientists are saying the new strain is not resistant to the vaccines now being approved and administered. More than 500,000 people have received the Pfizer jab in the UK, which was the first country to approve it, and Europe's medicine regulators have approved it as well, which means inoculations will be underway across the bloc in a matter of days. Bianca Rahimi, London.
Can you download an HD movie in 1 second? Thanks to 5G internet? Yes. While around 50 countries have already launched the fifth-generation broadband service, Iran is also jumping on the wagon to roll out the high-speed internet network. Iran's Science and Technology Vice Presidency says 5G coverage will for now be available in the country's Kish Island and will soon reach other regions.
We can now say that Iran is one of the first countries that stepped into this modern technology. We have built the needed infrastructure in Kish Island and at the same time are working on major locations such as Tehran to roll out the technology.
Iran successfully tested 5G in July when users reported a 1.5 gigabit per second of download speed on their mobile phones. However, Iran's ST Vice Presidency says 5G for now will not be offered for household applications and will initially be limited to industrial uses, such as smart transportation.
With 5G's low latency, reliability, and powerful connections, we can create an integrated transport network that connects all cars together and also connects personal cars to police for instant guidance and warnings.
Not also in our country, but also most of the countries, 5G infrastructures aren't implemented yet. So we need pass time for implementing these infrastructures. And after that, we can use the use cases of 5G.
The deployment of 5G technology is expected to boost Iran's infrastructure for accommodating sensitive online services through domestic servers. Experts say this will significantly increase the cloud computing capacity in the country.
Some 70 million Iranian SIM card owners currently use the third and fourth generation of mobile internet. They still have to wait to see the 5G icon appearing on the top corner of their smartphones. But Iran's ICT officials promised to make 5G internet available for widespread personal use by the end of 2022. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The Austrian government announces a third hard lockdown starting immediately after Christmas on the 26th of December. Chancellor Sebastian Kurz had promised that the second lockdown, which ended 2 weeks ago, would save Christmas. But that mission has proven to be nearly impossible. Like the majority of nations around the world, Austrians are not expecting a regular Christmas or New Year's Eve. But things don't look entirely bleak, as vaccinations are set to begin across Europe and Austria on the 27th of December. With every week, says Chancellor Kurz, we get a step closer to ending this pandemic.
Measures will become stricter until the seven-day incident is below 100, and in mid-January there will be free mass tests for everyone who wants to take part.
The goal is to keep weekly cases below 100 per 100,000 people. That number currently stands at just under 200. The lockdown is expected to end on January 18th, but only for those who agree to get tested. For those not willing to take the test, the stay-at-home order and curfew will be in place for another extra week. Health Minister Rudolf Anschober expressed concern over the dramatic increase in mortalities across the country over the last 2 months.
With no further measures, at the end of the month, new cases could range between 1,300 and 3,000 cases a day.
For now, the new restrictions mean everyone entering Austria from abroad has to go into a 10-day quarantine, which can only be cut short after 5 days with a negative PCR or antigen test.
Over the Christmas holidays, more contacts and therefore more cases are expected, and the latest preventive measures announced by the government are meant to bridge the time until the vaccine can be rolled out in the new year. Homolezki, Vienna.
Hi, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Hi, sir.
Hi, kitty. Good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
Supplication on Saturdays. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Bismillah, words that seekers of sanctuary repeatedly recite. Words that the very cautious in search of protection often repeat. I seek refuge with Allah, the Exalted above all. From the oppression of the unjust, from the deceitful malice the envious use to lay snares and traps, from the injustice and outrage of the tyrants, and I sing his praise. Do better and go beyond other praisers. O Allah, thou art one, has no partner, and is the Lord Master without being made. There is no discrepancy or nonsense in thy commands, nor there is lawlessness in thy kingdom. I beseech thee to send blessings on Muhammad, thy servant, thy messenger. To let me ask thee for enlightenment and inspiration, so as to be thankful for thy bounties, which alone get thy approval ultimately. To help me to obey thee, and instinctively worship thee, and make me deserve thy rewards on account of thy very patronage. And have mercy on me, and prevent me from breaking in the bounds of thy prohibitions, as far as I am kept alive, and show the way unto that which is useful and advantageous till I go on survive. To let me take to heart the meanings of thy book, and by its reading, throw down the heavy burden of sins, and receive welfare and salvation as a gift. Let not my family and friends who love me leave me alone. Let thy favors reach me in abundance during the remainder of my life, exactly as they used to be made available for me in full in the days gone by. Oh, the most merciful.
the debate.
Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. U.S. President Donald Trump has granted clemency to two people who pleaded guilty in the Russia inquiry, four Blackwater guards convicted of killing Iraqi civilians, and three corrupt former Republican members of Congress. The four Blackwater security guards were convicted of murder and manslaughter in Iraq 6 years ago. Their pardon has drawn international condemnation, especially from the Iraqi people who lost some of their fellow countrymen in a Blackwater shooting. The Iraqi Foreign Ministry has also urged Washington to review that decision. What's behind Mr. Trump's disregard of Iraqi people's sentiments, and why should he do such things on the last legs of his presidential tenure? Now let's go to Washington, D.C., to our own correspondent, Wyatt Reed, there and see what he has for us. Wyatt, over to you.
Well, it's an interesting question, just what is motivating Donald Trump to pardon these murderers, convicted murderers, men who, again, killed women, children, at least 14, children as young as 9 years old. So what may be motivating this, some observers have noted, is the relationship between the founder of Blackwater, Eric Prince, the brother of Betsy DeVos, Donald Trump's education secretary. So there is sort of an element of corruption, of nepotism. This kind of dynamic is certainly one to keep an eye out for. And as you pointed out, this decision to pardon these murderers has been condemned by international groups, including the UN Office of High Commission on Human Rights. The Iraqi Foreign Ministry did put out a statement noting that this decision was, quote, inconsistent with the U.S. administration's declared commitment to the values of human rights, justice, and the rule of law. I think that's an interesting word, the U.S. administration's declared commitment. They didn't say the U.S. administration's commitment, because judging by this decision and by so many more, it is really only a superficial commitment, and I think that may be something that is being underlined by this statement.
Okay, thank you for that. From Washington, D.C., that was Wyatt Reed. Now, joining me in this debate tonight will be author of The No More War, Daniel Kovalik, out of Pittsburgh, and also diplomatic political analyst Hatem Yavuz, who's joining us out of Turkish city of Istanbul. Welcome to the show, both. Let's go to Daniel. 17 Iraqi civilians, including two children, were killed when Blackwater forces opened fire in Baghdad's Nisour Square in 2007. On what ground has Mr. Trump pardoned them?
Well, I don't think he has stated a ground, and I don't think he has to. You know, as the president, he has virtually unreviewable pardon power. But the message he's sending is loud and clear, and that is that his position, certainly as commander-in-chief, is that U.S. forces, whether they be official or private forces, should not be accountable for war crimes. And he has made this position known time and again, probably most notably in sanctioning the International Criminal Court, because it wants to investigate the U.S. for war crimes in Afghanistan. So this pardon underscores the position, I think, not just of Donald Trump, but of the U.S. government in general, that the U.S. is above international law. And when it comes to war, the U.S. Can do anything it pleases.
Now, let me turn to Istanbul, to Hatem Yavuz. Hatem, Trump granted the clemency at a time of a strong anti-U.S. sentiment in Iraq, where people and also parliamentarians want U.S. Boots out of their country. So what's behind this total regard of the Iraqi people's hard feeling?
I actually don't want to go there. I want to go to where the U.S. is heading itself. I mean, the elections, the health system, the judicial system now in the U.S., this year, especially during the pandemic, has showed itself of all the elements of a third world country, unfortunately. Now, and going back to the Blackwater issue. Now, the Blackwater is just a company, a mercenary group that's highly paid under the 2002 American Service Members Protection Act, which is called the Hague Invasion, meaning that any American personnel that is indicted or summoned to the Hague they don't have to extradite that person. And in the event that that person is caught and is summoned, taken to The Hague, the U.S. military can impose its military force and extract that person out of The Hague. Very hypocritical if you're talking about a country that bloats about its democracy and whatever. Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, Paul Bremer, the ex-consul in Iraq, imposed the Order 17. The Order 17 that any American personnel is above the law in Iraq, playing God. Mm-hmm. So, and that's a fact. I mean, you can check up on the documents. Mm-hmm. And Paul Bremer, when he imposed that act, obviously Blackwater was basically drunk on its powers. And it overruled, rather overrided, its actions, and by, you know, killing civilians, and there are a lot more. And you've got to thank for all this information to hero WikiLeaks Julian Assange, who's in Belmarsh prison today, and he's the hero here because if these documents weren't exposed at that time, we wouldn't be talking about this today, would we? Mm-hmm. So. Unfortunately, Iraq is relatively not stable, relatively unstable, and it's a message to not just the Iraqis, to the whole world, that this is what happens when you have U.S. forces in your place, in your backyard. Mm-hmm. This is the rules. You know, you want do you want a U.S. base in your country? Fine, but these are the rules. They are above the law. Now, if this continues. Now, we saw this year how the U.S. is with its elections, which is debacle. You know, a third world country doesn't have elections like this. And their health system, unfortunately, bloating about how big the health system is there. The U.S., instead of spending all that money on guns and bombs, they could have spent more money on fixing themselves up instead. But what's happening now, they are discrediting themselves. They are defaming themselves on their own. You know, empires fall. Not because of other forces, it's within themselves, because they ride against what they created. Mm-hmm. So I mean, there's another general who I have a lot of respect for, and who I've met actually twice, is General Flynn. You know, they are damaging, they defamed that poor man. I mean, honestly, he's a good man and a very intelligent man, and they defamed him in their own system. That poor guy didn't have to go to any other courts around the world. He got defamed within his own country. Mm-hmm. So the message here is, you know, you can get emotional, but technically, it's these countries that they call themselves sovereign. Are they really sovereign?
Okay, good question. Now, Daniel, the UN Human Rights Office says it's deeply concerned by the pardons, which I quote, contributes to impunity and emboldens others to commit such crimes in the future. Do you share the same view?
Absolutely. I mean, of course. This was a clear violation of international humanitarian law, the Geneva Conventions, frankly, of just basic, you know, human decency. And to pardon these people, again, at the last minute as Trump is leaving office, just sends a terrible message to the world. It tells the world the U.S. really doesn't care about human rights. Most of us who've been paying attention know that, but this really underscores that position. It should also be noted there's a bit of, you know, nepotism here, too. You know, Prince, who is the head of Blackwater, it's now been renamed, is the brother of Betsy DeVos, who is the head of education, you know, under. So, you know, there's both, big messages being sent and then kind of small-time corruption messages being sent, none of which are very good. And I agree with my colleague who said that the U.S., well, he said is becoming a third world country. I live here. It already is a third world country. I saw one meme I like quite a bit. The U.S. is a third world country without health care. And that's just true. You know, we are one of the most economically disparate countries on earth. It is being eaten from within. It's not being threatened from outside. It never really was threatened from the outside. But it is corrupt at its core.
Now back to Istanbul. Hatem, you talk about a general. I have another one here for you. Retired American General Mark Hertling, who used to serve in Iraq, and he has called this pardon egregious and disgusting. And now we have some others that regard this as self-serving pardons that reward friends and gratify political constituency. What's your assessment of this move?
I agree with him because, you know, I know many military personnel, and in my past especially, and they are very, very smart and noble people and very correct in their actions. But, you know, I think the U.S. is poisoned by its power, and that's what's dismantling its whole structure. For example, if Trump pardoned Manning or Assange or Edward Snowden, for example, this could have sent another message to the whole world that we are still decent. You know, these issues. I mean, I'm reading the news with Assange. The man's dying in prison. Hasn't been summoned into the context, because recently there was a leak that Assange told the U.S. State Department about the documents that were going to be released, but they did nothing about it. Mainstream media in the U.S. are blinded. They don't do anything at all. So the people, they brainwash their own people. I mean, look at the U.S. TV stations. You will not hear these sort of debates on TV at all. So, you know, it's all about ethics. Forget the law. You know, if you really want to be a superpower, and that's what they want to be, you have to base yourself on ethics, not all this, you know, showing some guns and printing money just to shut the planet up. It's not happening anymore.
Now, Daniel, one basic question: why should Washington recruit notorious private security firms like Blackwater to carry out operations in different parts of the world? Is it meant to evade accountability?
Well, I think it is. I think that's what it is to do. Because, first of all, it evades accountability, first and foremost, to the American people, because there's a lot less accountability for those private firms than there are for the official military. You know, we rarely know how many even personnel these private companies have in theater. Whereas we, you know, generally it's easier to know, and easier for Congress to know how many official military personnel are in theater at any time. So one, it really evades accountability to the American people, to the American Congress, and yes, it evades accountability to the international law system, to, you know, the system which requires the U.S. to abide by the Geneva Conventions. So it is an underground, essentially, means of conducting war without having to answer for the conduct of the war.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct. And at the same time, private contractors can hire people from all around the world. Like Blackwater has people from, one is from Bulgaria that was summoned as well. Mm-hmm. So they can hire people from all over the world for all types of experiences. So the accountability is not there. And in the ICC, states, which I know very well, the ICC, you cannot summon a private person or a company. It's between sovereign countries and the internal warring parties that are officially declared. And Blackwater is not a warring party. It's just a contract. It's a company, and basically they just do what they have to do. So, you know, you've got the Russian Wagner Group, you've got the French Legionnaires, and it just goes on. So it's been like this not just for recently, it's been like this for a few decades.
Right. Hadam, I just wanted to ask you about what Daniel also referred to. You know, the fact that the now defunct Blackwater's owner was Eric Prince, and he's Eric a close Prince, supporter yeah. of President Trump and brother of his Secretary of Education. What does this tell you?
Well, you know, Trump is a very staunch supporter of its military and personnel in the military, and he's right to be. Eric Prince, well, you know, he's made a lot of money out of all this business, and you know, these connections wasn't from Trump. It all started from the Bush era. You know, it didn't start from Trump. You know, Eric Prince was being honored for many years. So, you know, having a person in the his brother in the health, department, it's nothing new. I mean, you know, people do favors for each other, and it's all about favors. It's corrupt, yeah. It happens all around the world. It's corrupt, but these favors are there on the table for. When Trump was voted for president in 2016, Eric Prince did a lot of favors for Trump as well.
Mm-hmm. And Hatem, what do you expect to happen?
Both ways.
Hatem, what do you expect to happen when the new president takes the helm of the affairs of the White House? Will Washington continue taking advantage of the services of private security firms like Blackwater?
Well, they were still there during the Obama administration, so it's not going to change much. You know, we've got to realize something. The president is just a tool. The deep state, I will call it, the Pentagons and whatever you want to call it, the CIAs, they actually structure what's going to happen. So whatever the president is dictated basically to do, he will do it. So I don't think much is going to change. I think that the new president, Biden, who is also very an experienced person, and you know, as foreign affairs, especially in the past, will try his best. But he's got a lot of problems within the country itself to fix before he starts going off to other countries and telling them what to do, basically.
Mm-hmm. So, and Hatem, what do you expect?
I don't see much going to change. Okay. Nothing's going to change.
Now, talking about Iraq, you know, Trump is doing this at a time when there is this deep anti-U.S. sentiment running in Iraq. Also, parliamentarians want foreign forces out, especially U.S. forces. So what is this an indication of when Trump is doing this and giving those people who are blamed for the massacre of a number of Iraqi people, including children, clemency?
Well, you know, what's going to happen, I'll call it the chemical reaction. I won't call it the emotional chemical reaction, you want to call it. The Iraqi administration will, you know, try to side with more with Turkey and more with Iran, and you know, make allegiance with them as much as they can because of this betrayal. I will call it. It's a purely betrayal by the U.S. government. So these, you know, going out on the streets and protesting and trying to, you know. Throw bombs in the green zone, etc., in Baghdad. It's not going to help. What's going to help is if the country becomes more united, in not just in the government but also in the public, it becomes more united to show that, you know, this force called the United States Army is no longer wanted. But this power vacuum, there's a problem with a power vacuum that will take over, and that could be, you know, with the influence of Iran, because, you know, don't forget, Iraq is, 60% Shiite, right, something like that.
Right.
So, you know, these sort of mm-hmm. issues are on the balance, and I'm seeing Turkey working very strongly with Iraq recently, making some breakthrough grounds in terms of security and allegiances. However, you know, we've got an ally, so-called ally, called the United States in Iraq. So what do they do? Can they kick them out? Maybe. I don't know. But it's a message to the world. You know, it's not a message just to Iraq.
Right.
You've got Afghanistan. You've got many other places.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments. We had the author of No More War, Daniel Kovalik in Pittsburgh, who just left us a few minutes ago, and also diplomat and public analyst Hatem Yavuz, who joined us from Istanbul. And thank you. I've been your host, Behruz Najafi, and I'll see you next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight. President Donald Trump approved a wave of pre-Christmas pardons, granting clemency to a former campaign aide caught up in the Russia investigation, disgraced Republican lawmakers, and several contractors convicted of massacring Iraqi civilians in Baghdad. The White House announced on Tuesday, 22nd of December, Trump has granted full pardons to 15 people, and commuted all or part of the sentences of five others. The beneficiaries include George Papadopoulos, a former campaign aide who pleaded guilty to lying to federal officials as part of the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election, and Alex van der Zwaan, who pleaded guilty to a similar charge in the Russia investigation and is the son-in-law of Russian billionaire German Khan. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalists Martin Pengelly and Manvi Singh. The piece is titled Trump Pardons Ex-Campaign Aide, Blackwater Contractors, and Disgraced Lawmakers. Stay with us for more of Martin Pengelly and Manvi Singh's article. President Donald Trump approved a wave of pre-Christmas pardons, granting clemency to a former campaign aide caught up in the Russia investigation, disgraced Republican lawmakers, and several contractors convicted of massacring Iraqi civilians. The White House announced on Tuesday, 22nd of December, that Trump has granted full pardons to 15 people and commuted all or part of the sentences of five others. The beneficiaries include George Papadopoulos, a former campaign aide who pleaded guilty to lying to federal officials as part of the investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election, and Alex van der Zwaan, who pleaded guilty to a similar charge in the Russia investigation and is the son-in-law of the Russian billionaire German Khan. The three former Republican U.S. representatives who were pardoned or had their sentences commuted on Tuesday were Chris Collins of New York, Duncan Hunter of California, and Steve Stockman of Texas. Chris Collins, a 70-year-old, had been the first sitting member of Congress to endorse Trump's candidacy in 2016 and was a strong defender of the president. He pleaded guilty to conspiring to commit securities fraud and making false statements to the FBI and received a full pardon from Donald Trump. Duncan Hunter of California, a 44-year-old, pleaded guilty in 2019 to conspiring to convert campaign funds for personal use and received a full pardon. Steve Stockman of Texas, a 64-year-old, was convicted in 2018 of misuse of charitable funds and had his sentence commuted after serving 2 of 10 years. Also pardoned were Nicholas Slatton, Paul Slough, Evan Liberty, and Dustin Hurd, former contractors at Blackwater Worldwide who were serving lengthy prison terms in connection with the massacring of Iraqi civilians in a 2007 massacre in Baghdad, the Iraqi capital. Among those killed by the Blackwater contractors were children, including a 9-year-old Iraqi boy and a mother who was clutching an infant. Two former Border Patrol agents were also among those pardoned. Ignacio Ramos and Jose Compian were found guilty of crimes related to shooting an unarmed man who was smuggling drugs in 2005. George W. Bush commuted their sentences in 2009, but did not grant a full pardon. President Donald Trump's use of the presidential pardon power has attracted considerable controversy, and a list of recipients on Tuesday drew strong rebuke from Democrats. These corrupt politicians don't deserve a pardon, said the Democratic California Representative Katie Porter. Appalling decision by the president. Are you still a pro-law enforcement president after you pardoned killers of a 9-year-old Iraqi boy and an 11-year-old, asked Joy Saleen, a law professor at the University of Alabama and former U.S. attorney for the Northern District of Alabama, about the decision in the contractor's case. Adam Schiff, the Democratic congressman who prosecuted Donald Trump's impeachment trial, tweeted, "Lie to cover up for the president, you get a pardon. Corrupt politician who endorsed Trump, you get a pardon. Murder innocent Iraqi civilians, you get a pardon. Elect a corrupt man as president, you get a corrupt result." While remarkable, Tuesday's wave of decisions did not come as a surprise. Back in November, Donald Trump pardoned his former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, who pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI investigators during the Russia investigation. Speculation has flourished about whom Donald Trump may pardon next. The pardoning of George Papadopoulos and Alex Van der Zwaan may signal that more Trump associates embroiled in the matter could expect pardons, including his former aides Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. Donald Trump's attorney Rudy Giuliani, the WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, and the National Security Agency whistleblower Edward Snowden are also among names commonly mentioned. Today's pardon helps correct the wrong that Robert Mueller's team inflicted on so many people, the White House said in a statement. George Papadopoulos, a 33-year-old, was an advisor to Donald Trump's 2016 election campaign. He pleaded guilty in 2017 to lying to FBI agents about the timing and significance of his contacts with people who claim to have ties to top Russian officials. The defendant's crime was serious and caused damage to the government's investigation into Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election, a sentencing recommendation memo from the then U.S. Special Counsel Robert Mueller said. George Papadopoulos served only 12 days of a 14-day sentence in federal prison, then was placed on a 12-month supervised release. It has also been reported that President Donald Trump has considered issuing a preemptive pardon for himself and also for members of his family who have worked in his White House.
Good morning.
Of beautiful Iran, IRIB English Radio.